we have no disclosures that we need to reveal to you at this time, maybe later. So in terms of context and overview, let me provide a few comments. There's lots of stuff going on and swirling around you, and the importance of performance management is central to managing that swirling conundrum. There's emerging areas of practice in public health have grown, few areas of practice are decreasing, and the recession means increased need in the population. That's going to continue to be the case. Categorical funding has been so helpful to us, it has also sort of imprisoned us in some ways in silos of disease-oriented intervention, leaving issues around the social determinants of health or health equity, the infrastructure, and our workforce, who might need redirection and training, sort of in limbo in the context of those silos. These are cross-cutting kinds of issues. And then there's the whole question of sustainable funding. There's continuing efforts, I think we'll see, to repeal the Affordable Care Act. That leads to uncertainty. Federal budgets, there is uncertainty about those budgets and very likely cuts. Whatever happens after January 1 is going to lead to either small cuts or bigger than small cuts. And then if you work at the state and local agency or community action organization, then you know that cuts are already existing. The cuts are unprecedented, frankly, at the state and local level. So we have this another new normal in public health. A federal, state, and local budget pandemic is upon us. And if you worked in public health during 9/11, it was the new normal for public health to go from an 8-to-5 job to a 24/7 job, 365 days, and that was, quote, the new normal. Well, now this is another new normal in public health when you think about it from this perspective of all of this swirling around us. So we need to adjust public health to health reform. We have a national prevention strategy we're trying to wrap our arms around. We have integration approaches going in chronic disease specifically. We have winnable battles, which really have an evidence base around policy interventions that have value. Performance, accountability, and QI are drivers. They are the underpinnings of the Public Health Accreditation Board activities for state, local, and tribal health agencies. There's new work looking at regionalization as we try to maximize what's our balance and our skill set. The whole challenge around health technology, data, and information and synthesis of health information across lots of sectors, and then new partnerships. How are systems aligning within communities and within states to make a difference? All of these kinds of things require performance management, consumer accountability, who's looking for transparency, and CQI. And in fact, all three of these kinds of tools really provide a transparent view of the work you're doing when you put the performance on the table and then monitor it from an ROI, et cetera, perspective, then you've really done your public some good, and frankly, you've done yourselves some good. So some people used to say, do more with less. I'd say, work with what you've got. And tomorrow you're going to work with what you got, and 2 years from now you're going to work with what you got, and this is the way to get there. And so hopefully you'll get some really nice perspectives, tools, and techniques to work with. So with that, Josh, if I could turn it over to you. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon. I'm going to go just very quickly. So I'm from the Virginia Department of Health. Virginia is a centralized state in terms of its public health operations. We've got 35 different health districts, 119 different health departments. And I directly report to our commissioner. And we have a new commissioner now. And these all our various offices across the board. We've got about 800 employees, $620 million budget, about 8 million folks altogether. We came in under the NIFI grant, under that CDC grant, to start up a performance improvement program in Virginia. We went with the just simplest model we can. The methodology is pretty much keep it simple, stupid across the board. We developed a council for our commissioner to review the performance projects that we undertake. Whenever we figure out any type of issue we want to approach, we get a cross-representative a team from across the agency to get together, look at the issue, map it out as much as possible, figure out what we can do, and take some improvement actions from there and pop it up to the council. throughout, even though we're charged with a lot of things like going after accreditation, NCQA accreditation, FAD accreditation, breaking down silos and that type of thing, we wanted to really focus on things that we could measure very easily and quickly. And so we really focused on efforts that save time, save money, and ultimately improve public health. But we really wanted to focus on things that had ROI for us. One of the very first initiatives we did was build just a dashboard system so we could track everything under the sun. We've got about 119 different databases. None of them talk to each other. We put them all together, put some of the critical metrics up there, and then also a lot of administrative metrics, financial metrics, and most importantly, the ROI metrics, so that we track every performance initiative that we undertake, and so that we are measuring the success on it to make sure it's actually a valuable undertaking. This thing is, this is just a screenshot. I didn't bring up the full dashboard, but it's a very dynamic tool. We've built it all in Excel. It has the exact same functionality of any of the very expensive programs that you can buy out there. And a trained monkey could do it in, 10 days or less. So happy to send any of you a copy of it so you can see what we do and how we measure everything. But it's been a pretty effective tool across the board. For us, measuring ROI, and I'm going to give you three samples of just what we've done, it can go all over the place because they all have different types of aspects to them. So getting one kind of model tool is a very significant challenge because they all have different factors and facets involved depending on what you're doing. And that's something we've been working with ASTO on. But for us, internally, we go with, again, the kind of keep it simple, stupid. We start with the baseline in terms of what's it costing us down to the unit, and be it time, be it money, what's the current process, and we get a total baseline cost. Then we start our performance improvement project, and of course, we measure it the entire time. How has the process changed? Have we saved time? Have we saved money? What are those variations? And then ultimately, we're coming up with our ROI. And this is very simplified. It can get very nitty-gritty, and you can get down to many levels of different types of units depending on the type of project that you're in. But at all times, you're going to need just kind of this basis, if you will. This, you probably can't even read, and it's going to give you a headache just looking at it. But this would be one of the cleanest-cut, easiest samples of a project we undertook right off the bat. It's very endemic of operations at Virginia Department of Health, sadly. This has probably been in operation since the 1980s, and it's called our HR 14 employee process. So if someone leaves a company, or if they get fired, or they retired, whatever, they got to go through this process to basically remove them out of all our computer systems. Absolutely insane. Right now, there's more than 40 steps involved and more than 20 people. So we got everybody in a room and started to go through this, and ultimately everybody becomes amazed at what's happening. And we found, overall, it's costing us about $140,000 a year in time and effort, 40 different steps, 20 different people, and basically we wanted to boil that, and it was taking us 30-plus days to complete. So, we said, this is stupid. And this is one of the easy ones, because all we had to do was just say, let's change it to this process. And we did that, and basically it's three people involved at our help desk now, it's 12 major steps, and it saves us roughly about $70,000 every year in time and effort. Now, time and effort's only so good. It's not cash in the bank, and that time is quickly eaten up at other places. But in terms of us kind of proving value, very simplistic projects like this that don't take a lot of complex measurement, except for that first screen. But once you get past that, easy peasy. This example, a little more complex, and one of the challenges of showing ROI, we spend an extraordinary amount of money on our IT system. So $18.5 million for 3,700 employees, which is pretty amazing. Northrop Grumman has just a fantastic deal in Virginia, and we are beholden to them. So we looked at this. There's a number of different areas we found where we could save from our computer inventory. We found that there are about 600 more computers in our inventory than we had people, just sitting around, getting charges every month. We found the way that we save data had extraordinary impact. We had like 9 terabytes of data, and if we only switched it from kind of the archaic DASD model, which is kind of the big disks you see in the 1980 movies when they play war, anything that's been invented after 1995, we actually save a tremendous amount of money. Instead of getting charged for the capacity of whatever that big old thing used to have, we'd get charged for only whatever we ultimately were using. And that made a tremendous, tremendous difference. So we undertook this project, and this has been a very long project. For us to go after it and tell our ROI has been a little more challenging. We recognized, just in terms of our inventory and how we save data, about $900,000 that we could save every year if we did it right. If we switched all our data, if we got our inventory down. To date, we've realized about 500,000 of that we'll get every single year in savings. But this project, in terms of measuring ROI, that's pretty easy to say, hey, we have $500,000 every single year. But to get down into the true nitty-gritty, it's been a little more challenging because it's a project that takes basically multiple years. So for us to go through the data project, you got to have an IT team that comes in and they look at these big round disks and figure out how the hell they work. And how to transfer the data and what needs to be saved and what doesn't. So last year we spent about $15,000 to $20,000 in time and effort in front of these IT guys, and this year we spent another about $30,000. And this project is expected to go on probably one more year. So in terms of measuring our ROI, we can get the basics, but then getting down to the nitty-gritty, it's just something that takes a little bit of time and we got to account for every year thereafter. But very successful project so far. Last but not least, public health outcomes. This is absolutely the hardest thing to ultimately measure ROI on. We undertook trying to bump up the enrollment in Plan First. So Plan First is a Medicaid family planning program. It gives you all types of contraception, that type of thing. But all types of barriers to getting in this program, from knowledge of it to enrollment systems. We had to work collectively with DMAS, DSS, and all these good folks to figure out a way to get people enrolled in it. All types of barriers throughout. We've been quite successful in this so far. The chart cuts off at October 11th, but when we started, we were at about a baseline of 6,000 people. We're up to 32,000 now, which is fantastic. Good stuff for us. And this is, you know, replacing a lot of things that we would otherwise service folks under Title 10. And for us, the ROI here is extraordinarily complicated because we can easily see we've already done over $1 million in additional revenue we would not have otherwise ever gotten through Medicaid, through those 32,000 people. So $1 million, that's growing, fantastic stuff, very easy to measure. But then we get to the hard part, to say, why did we do this in the first place? Well, we wanted to increase the space between pregnancies. We wanted to decrease unintended pregnancies. We wanted to lower the abortion rate, ultimately. And all those types of things can be impacted by Plan First and by family planning, but giving someone back, giving the governor back an ROI estimate becomes very, very challenging here. Obviously, getting the data, following a woman through the course of her history for us, so we can say, well, we got her into the program, she didn't become a pregnant again, and people who didn't get into the program had this type of incident rate. Very hard for us to get to that level of data, but we're starting to now, and we're starting to compare basically a control group versus the non-control group. Coming down to that causal relationship, to being able to say with absolute certainty, because we did this program and because we ended 32,000 people, the incident rate for pregnancy is much lower. And because of that, based on a per unit cost of birth or a per unit cost of complications or anything like that, and that variation, basically, in the pregnancy rate, we have saved the state X amount of dollars. We can't get there yet. But that... And this is a sample, I think, for everything. And the ultimate challenge for public health and the thing we need to get to is determining this type of ROI. When you can say, we invested this many dollars, and because of this, we kept the incident rate at X. At every incident cost X amount of dollars, because you invested, you have saved the state millions and millions of dollars. That's where we need to get to. That is the ultimate tool. And when we have that, and all 50 states agree upon it, we're going to be in really, really good shape. Well, that's the goal. If we all sit in a room and get it done, we're going to be in much, much better shape than we do now when we go to our legislators and they say, what do you do? We can list off all these fantastic services, but we can't put a dollar figure behind it. And for, you know, simple country boys like me, I just need to see the bucks at the end of the day because I don't understand the rest of the stuff. It's the truth. So the ROI tool must be dynamic. Again, I'm happy to send out our dashboard to you guys so you can see how we do it across the board. The PI projects are always varying in complexity and the number of factors that you need to do. And I, you know, I think this is just redundant for the rest of the stuff I said, basically. Questions now? Or
sure.
Anybody have questions? Hey.
What I wonder is, I know that I'm always excited when I see this work, especially yours, that I've been tracking for a while. Can you determine what the effect has been on your staff? Have they? And I'm not even necessarily talking about buy-in, but when they say, we've saved this money. Here's this effect that this has had on, you know, our IT system. This is how we made it easier. Is there some intangible effect?
Yes, I would say. When you sit everybody in a room and they get to that ridiculous slide that's got 40 steps and they're like, oh, what are we doing? And they have that wake-up moment. What we've seen is that they're coming to us now with a lot of other projects to say, boy, I think this one sucks too. Could we change it? And that's great. That's exactly what we want. So that's been happening.
So how did you get that first?
We went around and asked everybody, what really sucks? Seriously, that's what we did. And boy, did they all have the same list. You know, they went down them, and the top five were across every department. And they were all internal administrative processes that we created ourselves that had absolutely no requirement in code or regulation. And so we just shot ourselves in the foot again and again for 20 years plus. That's a great question. No, because there's basically Virginia Department of Health has gotten gutted in terms of its budget for the last probably 5 years in a row, and we every fiscal cycle we've done a 2, 4, and 6% reduction exercise that has come down to reductions in force. So we're kind of bare bones now. With that said, we do have a couple projects coming up where they're very specialized. Like we do bedding and upholstery, where we inspect all the little tags on your beds. And that's one person. We've got one person. She's been doing it for 25 years. And basically, we could just do it all online, and we could process the payments online, and that would be that. So I anticipate, yeah, there will probably be some reductions in force in the future, depending on the project. But we didn't want to start off with those.
I got a question. Sometimes when you make these savings, it opens up a space to be filled by another activity. So you don't actually see some reduction. So are you seeing that kind of transformation or change in any of these so that in the IT process, when they change the storage, did that create a space for them to do something else?
I'd like to say yes, but no, okay. not in this case. Can you repeat that?
Yeah. You're doing your ROI analysis, your cost savings analysis. Sometimes it's very hard to get around the parameters of what you're measuring and to monitor the changes.
Yes.
Sure.
Well, I absolutely agree. And in the last two projects, you know, we had that difficulty to some degree because we couldn't very easily quantify, for say, the IT savings. how much the IT staff was actually going to, how much time they're going to spend, how much time they're actually going to invest. So we had to wait. And then, of course, the other foot of that is, so like the Plan First program, where I know ultimately that $1 million in revenue is fantastic, but I know we are saving way, way, way more by just preventing, you know, say if we say 10, which might have been high-risk pregnancies that might have gone to the NICU and rang up all types of, you know, millions of dollars from the state. That is the ultimately complex. There are studies, no matter what the health impact model is, there is probably a study that exists out there already on the unit cost. And through Medicaid, you can basically determine a ballpark range for a lot of it. But then there's great difficulty assigning causality, and maybe that's the lawyer in me not wanting to shut up, but that's a hard part to say, because we had this program, the incident rate is X, and thus we have saved you X amount of dollars. Now, at some point, I think just because public health will get so gutted, we just need to do that. We need to sit in a room and agree upon, if our incident rate is this, we're saving everybody X amount of money and agree upon it. But I'm not sure if I'm really getting to your question, but yes.
No, I mean more, because then when you come up with these wonderful numbers, they're easily taxed. And then you can they're heavily explained about what the assumptions were behind them. And sometimes after explaining all those assumptions, you just bore everybody out.
And I think that's why we pick, you know, I pick our projects very carefully. So the ones that are like Plan First, I tend to stay away from. Or, you know, like making everybody hold hands and get rid of the silos and that type of thing. Absolutely has to be done, but you can't. It's really hard to show your worth after the fact. Yes, I think any types of, you know, all the administrations from I've seen are archaic. I mean, they're archaic. You know, the 1980s are calling and they want their process back, as someone recently said. So I'd go after this. If you're just starting a PI project or a PI in your agency, start with stuff that's got bucks behind it that you can see quickly. Because everything else is going to take a long time.
Great. Let's give Josh a hand. We'll have some more time at the end for those questions you're still thinking about. But now we have Laura Reeves, who's going to talk about assessing customer satisfaction.
Thank you very much. Thanks for warming them up for me, Josh. I'll try to be weave in that comical humor as we go through. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about assessing customer satisfaction, but I want you to understand who the Florida Department of Health is. We are considered a centralized public health department, meaning that we have 67 local health departments and our program offices, and they are all one Department of Health. So we have almost 17,000 employees in the department. Our mission is provided, and so those 17,000 employees work in our 67 county health departments. We have 22 children's medical service offices throughout our state. We have 16 central office divisions and offices. Those are like our policy and management offices, environmental health, disease control, epidemiology, kind of that oversight for the entire department. Medical quality assurance is a division that handles all of our health care licensure in the state of Florida, plus they have 11 investigative offices for noncompliance. We also house the federal program for disability determinations. That's under the Social Security Administration within our department, and they have 9 offices. And then we also run 4 public health laboratories. So as it relates to customer satisfaction, in 2006, our department decided that we would create a county performance snapshot, so a balanced scorecard of sorts, for our county health departments. So the majority of what I will talk about this afternoon will be focused only on our county health departments and how we've been working with them on customer satisfaction. This county performance snapshot is a standardized performance report for all 67 counties. It consists of standards, measures, their current performance, targets that are expected for those measures, and trend information. It is based on the Baldrige framework. Are any of you familiar with the Baldrige framework, the performance management framework? Customer focus is one of those key components in that framework. And so you will see here at the bottom of the slide the three measures that in 2006 were established for our counties as it relates to customer satisfaction. We expected our CHD programs to conduct a customer satisfaction process. Those are programs defined as being serving external customers. This is not internal customer satisfaction or employee satisfaction. We do that, but that is excluded from this measurement. We wanted them to look at the responses on their customer satisfaction surveys, specifically looking at satisfactory or better. And we wanted them to acknowledge customer complaints by the end of the next business day. You can see here that I've taken a county and provided the information. The DOH targets are provided, so and those are on the far column over there, 80%, 90%, and 100%. And then we also indicate kind of with a check mark whether or not the county is meeting this. This is supported, fortunately for us, by a Florida Customer Services Standard Act, which is in Florida statutes. It does require all of our state agencies to include measurement on customer satisfaction and include it in their strategic plan and handle complaints. So we measured it for a couple of years, and in 2008 we decided to look at, so how are we doing? And we found that 48 of our 67 county health departments had programs that were conducting a customer satisfaction process. We had 55 reporting that their overall satisfaction rates were 80% or better, and we had 53 reporting that their complaints were being responded to within the next business day at only 58%. Those all three were below our target for performance. So we had a Quality Improvement Advisory Council look at the data and ask them more questions. And what they came to is that we don't have a standardized data collection tool. So we can look at this data all day long, but we have no way to compare those results or even be able to say that this aggregate information is valid for us to be making some decisions on. So it was the impact was we had no standardization of reporting the data to us so that we could look at it aggregately across 67 counties, and they had no ability to benchmark with one another so that they could get best practices or lessons learned. So the council decided that we needed to implement a statewide performance improvement project. In Florida, we have a five-step model, which basically models after Plan, Do, Check, Act. Are most of you familiar with Plan, Do, Check, Act? So we gathered and analyzed the performance data, which I displayed on the previous page. We identified the problems, which were we had no standardized data collection tool and the impact that had. And so the solution was to go forward and first get a standardized tool developed that would, one, collect customer satisfaction data, and that it would allow us to track complaint data. We created a group that created the data collection tools, and then we did a pilot of those tools. We checked to evaluate those tools and the usefulness of them. There was some modification of the tools, which I'll share, and then we did implement throughout our counties. So the group came together and developed this tool. This is a survey tool that was piloted. As you can see, there are six core questions. They are around some quality attributes that we felt were consistent or core for all programs. We wanted to know how accessible was the information or service, how courteous were our staff, how knowledgeable were they in the information they were providing, was the information they provided clear and understandable, were the staff helpful, and were they served timely? How many of you would agree those are key attributes if you're going someplace that you want to see? And then we wanted the overall question, which is actually the question that comes up and we aggregate on the county performance snapshot. You will see that we use a Likert scale, strongly agree to strongly disagree, and then we had neither agree nor disagree, plus we also had no opinion. The customer comment and complaint tracking tool was developed. They decided that a lot of times complaints or satisfaction comments are given verbally. So either throughout the process or at checkout, people will often articulate how they feel at that point. They will not fill out a little card or a survey, and sometimes it's very glowing remarks, and sometimes they're not very satisfied. So they felt it might be easy for those at a checkout or that are handling the billing or the last step out the door to be able to have a document that they could document that information and be the voice of the customer. So this tracking sheet was developed. It's in Excel, and we defined each of those categories. The comment category aligns back to the 6 quality attributes, so they could look at their customer satisfaction data as well as this data by common groups. So once the tools were developed, we wanted buy-in from the customers that would be using this tool to collect customer satisfaction. We were very fortunate that we had 12 county health departments, which are circled here, and we had 4 central office programs that came forward and said they would be more than willing to pilot this tool. So we didn't have to voluntold anybody, which works really good if you can get that volunteering instead of voluntold. And so these counties were asked to participate in a pilot. It was a 3-month pilot from March to May of 2009. Their requirements were that at a minimum, they needed to administer that customer satisfaction survey tool at least 1 week each month. They needed to utilize the customer complaint tracking sheet during the entire month, and we wanted them to collect and analyze the results so that they could decide how they were doing with customer satisfaction. And for the purposes of the pilot, we did provide a definition for customer, which was actual or potential user of the department's information products, programs, or services. So they went forth and they participated in the pilot. You can see from the data here in our check that 43% actually used the customer satisfaction surveys the entire month for all 3 months. 29% did as asked, 1 week per month. We had some that were just kind of ongoing. We had a group that decided they would just do it once a week. And we had another group that just did it 1 week only. We also were interested how they did the survey, whether they did it paper, web-based, comment cards, or other, and I'll talk a little bit more about why the venue or the methods are very important, but here you can see how they responded. We provided a sheet for them to tally those results. These actually are the aggregate results from all of the pilot participants. We had over 6,000 responses received. We did not calculate how many went out the door. So 6,000 sounds real good, right? So we'll talk about, so this is just a tool that they can use to kind of calculate it and portray the information. We also were interested in what they did with the comments and complaints and how they did this, how we wanted to know if you kept it in Excel, did you hand out paper copies to everybody, did you put the paper copies in a central location, did you do individually and centrally located, and they were kind of all over the map. Interestingly enough, they used multiple venues, but in most cases only one person collected or compiled them, so I'm not sure that they understood the question that we were asking, because if you only had one person doing it, I'm not sure how they did it in this many venues. They could have. So we wanted to know how useful it was, so we put comments and complaints. Most people don't think of those being in the same basket, and actually we had 8 of our participants that thought, yes, it was useful to have it all in one place. Interestingly enough, 4 said they didn't even use it. However, the previous data indicated that they did. So some challenges there in the data. For those that said they did use it, we were interested in why they thought it was useful. And they thought the ease of comparison across those, so they were able to see in one place what comments and complaints they were getting in each of the 6 quality attributes. It was easier for them to review having it all in one place, and it was less paperwork. They didn't have to keep a whole other tracking form for the comments somewhere else. We asked them a little bit about which counties received complaints. We actually only had 5 counties that received complaints during the pilot. There were 71 total received across those 5 counties. 40 of those complaints were anonymous, therefore they were not able to acknowledge them necessarily. We've worked a little bit on this, that if you get the complaint verbally, you should acknowledge it immediately. If you get the complaint in writing and it's anonymous and there is no follow-up information, you would exclude that from your denominator because you have no way of acknowledging that complaint. And you can see here for the 5 counties, 4 reported that they did very well as far as acknowledging it by the next business day, and we had 1 county that had some challenges with doing that. So based on all that information, we brought the group back together and we said, so what do we do? If the goal was to have tools, what do we have in the end? They came back and they finalized the customer satisfaction tool. They decided that no opinion was kind of redundant. It didn't get a lot of use. We have neither satisfied nor dissatisfied in there, and they seem to think that having both of those wasn't good for the client to be able to make a decision. They did reverse, so the overall is first. They allowed for additional comments, and they have the ability to mark their program since they have multiple programs. I did not indicate that during the pilot as well as now they can add to these core questions. We asked them not to change the core questions, but if their program required they collect specific information, like school health or WIC, some other programs have some specific questions that they need, they were allowed to add them to the survey tool. There were no changes made to the comments and complaint tracking sheet. This is the tool to kind of compile. We added a area in there that would automate the completion rate. So if they did indicate how many surveys were distributed and how many they got back, it would automatically provide their completion rate for them. So here's our storyboard. I don't expect you to be able to see it, but in your storyboard you talk about your future plans. We did communicate the tools to the organization in June of 2010. We had some leadership changes so that delayed the communication. They were communicated via our web and were made available for use. There was no policy or requirement to use them. So what did we learn? Understanding and appreciating where everyone is in terms of customer satisfaction. Not everybody was doing it. Not everybody had the capacity to do it or the training to understand how they were going to take that information and what they were supposed to do with it. We did provide training during this session. The other thing that we learned is that some folks already had survey methods in place. They were using electronic kiosks, they were using handheld devices. Those methods actually had a restriction on the number of questions that could be inputted. So we had people participating in the pilot that had no ability to ask the 7 questions that we asked. Unfortunately, we didn't know that ahead of time. And so that impacts when you're looking at how many questions are you going to put on a survey, and when you're setting policy or direction for how many everybody has to ask, you need to understand kind of the lay of the land and what's already out there so that you can be flexible but still get that information that you can share across the counties. And translation in Florida, for us, translation of forms can be affected by multiple dialects. That was a huge area that we had to address during the pilot. We did provide the forms in English, Creole, and Spanish. However, because of the multiple dialects that we had, there were some challenges, and we had to kind of work through that. So it's just understanding who the clients are, who the customers are, what languages they speak, what dialects you need them in, how frequently they can get the information, what the literacy level is. And so all of those things you just kind of have to understand as you head into this. I think that was it.
Let's take some questions. Questions for Laura?
Were there incentives for our customers to participate in the surveys? No. Some of ours have it as kind of as you go out the door, they have a kiosk there, which is knowing and understanding the multiple methods that were used. But as far as I know, there was not. They continued to do their survey methods in the way that they had done their survey methods before. So they mailed it out to all their customers that they saw in a particular month, et cetera. But there was no specific incentives for completing the survey.
And one in the back.
In the very
back.
So how did we get, the question was, how did we get the information back? Some were mailed back. Some were little comment cards that are in the county health department that they could stick in boxes wherever they were. Some of it was kiosks, so it was done real time, or on the handheld devices, it's real time information. So it was because of the multiple methods, we got it back multiple ways, which also made it hard for response rates to be figured. Because if you don't know how many, if you're in a mailing or if you're in a comment card that's just laying on a table, you don't know how many you had laying on the table to know how many came in. So that made part of that response rate a little bit difficult to compute. We have multiple hands, Jim, if you can get them in.
It sounds like the tool was developed centrally for Florida, and then they were able to get the counties in the development.
Yes, ma'am, we did involve the counties. The collaborative that decided what would be on the tool was County Health Department and Central Office Program, so it was both, yes. In the back?
So it sounds like there was at least a little resistance to in your pilot getting them out by your staff. Did you come up with any good ideas?
that we promoted the use of customer satisfaction survey tools. No, we did not really address that in the pilot, and I think we continue to try to address that in the department. Our performance management is done centralized as well as done by each of the local county health departments, so a lot of that is dependent on the local county health department leadership as well. And so working in concert with them to make sure that we have, even though we're centralized, that we have a standardized message to all of them about the importance of understanding where our customers are. Not all of our CHD programs that should be conducting customer satisfaction are conducting customer satisfaction. So that's also a challenge. So, did that answer your question?
One more question? Yeah, Katie. Oops.
The question was interest of the state law, and so is it required just the health department or all state agencies, and then how are we information sharing across all state agencies? The law is for all state agencies that are under the governor's direction. There are no teeth in that law. So while it specifies what we should be doing, there has not yet, although our current governor is very likely to look at that information, currently not kind of having to report. It encourages you to report. We have worked with some of our other agencies and asked them, what are you doing? But because all of the state agencies kind of have different customers and what you're doing and what kind of services, that sort of thing, I think there's a lack of understanding about how you could use that, even though you're in a different business, how you can use that information across. So I don't think we're doing that as well as we could be.
Great. Let's thank Laura. Now we'll welcome Sean Polk to talk about implementing the balanced scorecard.
Good afternoon. One tool that you can use to measure impact and to tell the story of your relevance as an organization and your return on investment is the balanced scorecard. So just to tell you a little bit about the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, we are the organization that represents each of the state health agencies as well as 7 territorial health agencies and 2 freely independent health agencies in Micronesia and Palau. We represent over 100,000 employees in those agencies, but our principal members are the chief health officers in those agencies. And they are responsible for developing the policy around public health issues and also to ensure excellence in state public health. As a staff and as an organization, our primary function is to provide feedback, technical assistance, and advocacy efforts on behalf of those health agencies as well. A little bit more about us. If everything were perfect and we were in a utopian society, we'd have healthy people thriving in a nation free of preventable illness. And what we do every day to drive towards that vision is to work towards transforming the public health and to help our members to transform the public health of their constituents in states and territories. In 2009, the staff undertook an effort to develop what should be the values of our organization. How do we want to see ourselves carry out this mission? And there were 5 things that were developed by the staff-driven effort. We want an organization that's respectful of members and staff, that's collaborative internally and externally with partners. We wanted a credible organization and one that demonstrated leadership and innovation. And all that should roll up into health and wellness of our members, our staff, and their constituents. I'll talk a little bit more about our strategic map because that's the genesis of our balanced scorecard, and that's what we try to measure against. I'll talk a little bit more about the balanced scorecard and the 4 perspectives and the evaluation loop. In 2009, we developed the current strategic map, which actually expires in December of this year. But as a process of developing that, we had key informant interviews with our funders, with people at HRSA, FDA, CDC, with members, internal staff, and partners such as NACHO, APHA, and others. And this is the strategic map that we began developing our metrics against. Our central challenge is to strengthen state and territorial public health effectiveness and improving health outcomes. The five areas that we were focusing on are to be the go-to resource for public health. That includes all of our advocacy efforts, to strengthen state-based public health practice, and to demonstrate the effectiveness of our members. The two internal columns reflected around developing sustainable and flexible resources and to develop a strong, robust staff effectiveness. So the balanced scorecard was developed to do just that, balance your internal, your external customers versus learning and growth, which are the staff metrics. But it's all driven by the vision, mission, and strategic themes. And most importantly, it's a management system. And that's something that we have discovered in implementing it. It can't just be for capturing data. It has to be used in a way to inform management decisions. So we developed the balanced scorecard in 2009. Just a little bit about the organization. There's executive director and chiefs, which are kind of the face of ASTO. Senior director level within the organization, which is our in-house management. They travel a little bit less than the chiefs do, so staff can come to them for questions that need to be answered. Directors, which are your project drivers. And then you have the analysts and administrative staff, which do a lot of the hands-on work. We decided to use the senior director level to develop the balanced scorecard because they had the strategic view of the executive level, but also the hands-on day-to-day perspective of the rest of the organization. And we also partnered with Deloitte. I'm a roar, so took that opportunity to share a little bit about myself. So there were four things that we looked at to develop a lens on how we were going to measure against our strategic map. What can we be the best in the world at? Staff and members said, leading the promotion and improvement of state and territorial public health, as opposed to local or federal, state and territorial lens. What are we, that's the staff and members, collectively passionate about? So when we're measuring against the strategic map, what should we be looking for? Ways to protect and improve people's health. What are funders looking for? CDC, HRSA, ASPR, what are they looking for when they give us resources? They're looking for us to be an agile convener. We have the capacity to pull together some of the greatest minds in public health, and also other fields that that will benefit public health, such as governance training, meta leadership, Harvard School of Governance, government. They're looking for a policy advisor, and they're looking for us to be the collective voice of our membership. You've heard earlier today two examples, Virginia and Florida, and each state is different. If you've seen one public health department, you've seen one public health department. But we can be the collective voice by hearing the voices of all of our respective members. And then once we are funded to do a project, what really drives us? What helps us to make our decisions on how to allocate those resources? Where can we make the greatest impact? And is it strategically aligned? One of the things that I've observed in public health is that there's so many things that are critical and important, it's really hard to prioritize. But the role of the balanced scorecard has really helped us as an organization to reach that last opportunity, be strategically aligned. So there are a couple of things that came out of the measurement system. One is looking at the priorities that we take on each year. When we developed our measures, we discovered that we had a number of quote-unquote unfunded priorities. Seems like an oxymoron. How can you have an unfunded priority? As Jim mentioned earlier, there are a number of emerging issues that come across our plate every year. H1N1 stands out in my mind. It was unexpected, but it became a priority by necessity. And we had to be agile in how we use our funds, and we also had to be agile in our partnering with other organizations to carry out our role in that particular endeavor. A second one is the development of our presidential challenge, which with each oncoming president every year changes. We, under our former president, David Lakey, had the presidential challenge of reducing preterm births. So we partnered with the March of Dimes and others, and Hearst and others, to carry out that initiative. And it was very successful. But all of that came about in measuring. Let's take a step back and see, do we actually have money to do the things that we said we want to do? Internally, one of the things that we began to observe is the length of time it takes to hire an employee. If we have all of these priorities and we're getting money to do things, but we don't have the staff to do it, then that's going to be a problem in actually executing it. So we began to measure how quickly it takes HR and hiring managers to bring someone on board. And actually looking at that data on a routine basis helped us to drive that number towards improvement. Lastly, the process that we are looking at currently is our contracting process. Not everything can be done in-house because some of our funding is one-time funding, so we wouldn't be good stewards if we only hired an employee to do one project for a few months and then let them go. So a number of things we contract out. But we began to take on more and more work, and we began to see a bottleneck in the contracting process. So one of the things that we have done to actually take this one step further is to develop a CQI approach to our contracting system. A couple of the tools that have actually helped us is, one of the tools actually is the board report. On a quarterly basis, our executive director and the executives of the organization meet with our board of directors, and we share with them our performance in the key areas that they've asked us to prioritize for that given year, including our ASTO values. And so that level of visibility actually helps us in using the tool as a management tool. On a monthly basis, Carl and others report out on how we're doing on the measures, and so that keeps the situational awareness present with our staff. And going forward, we'll be meeting regularly with the executive team to share these same measures and discuss how we can improve our performance internally. So one of the things that I've observed in developing the balanced scorecard is that you have to have participation at every level and throughout the organization if you're going to have full buy-in. That's at the executive level, all the way throughout the organization. A couple of lessons that I've taken away and I've seen staff benefit from in this endeavor. Prioritization can be challenging, but the balanced scorecard can help you to drive the organization in a direction that is strategic. Ownership is going to be critical to success, both at the executive level and actually throughout the organization. That the tool doesn't exist for data's sake, but to inform decisions and improve moving the mission along. And then consistently monitoring and measuring, keeping an eye on how you're doing, actually helps with performance. It improves your culture, and it helps the organization to move towards a CQI culture. And this is the current strategic map, which the board of directors approved in September, which will govern our work from 2013 in January through December 2015. And I just want to point out a couple of things that have changed in this map, which I think actually comes from the thinking of a measurement mindset. One, the cross-cutting theme of cultivate continuous quality improvement. That's internally and also helping our members to do that through NIFI grants and other ways is a cross-cutting theme. So that's going to touch on every box, the QI piece. And then in the central challenge, the language has changed to strengthen the effectiveness and the value. So it's going to be important to demonstrate our return on investment and to measure our relevance, if you will. Effectiveness, value, and relevance of state and territorial public health in promoting health equity and improving health outcomes. So in a time of reducing funding, it's going to be important to stay mission-minded. So thank you. Any questions?
Opportunity for questions. Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about how you translated what you have on the map into what's actually on the scorecard?
Certainly. So I'll just go back a little bit. And this is the current map, but I'll just explain how we use it. So we would look at each, I'll pick one, support members with critical state public policy and public health law and information. So we would look at that from a programmatic lens to see what exactly we're doing right now, what the members need us to do, and what the funders are expecting us to do, and we would break it down from that. We use the strategic map to actually break down the measures. Does that explain a little bit?
And then once you broke them down, how did you decide how
So it's owned by staff, so we would, on a quarterly basis, talk to staff to see how they're performing against that measure. And we actually have a software program now, QuickScore, which each individual team can upload their information into directly.
I think there's another part of the question, if I could add. There's four classes of measures based on the customer, internal strategy, financial, and learning and growth. So you'll see balanced scorecard measures in those four categories. Now, you wouldn't see them on every box. Some boxes will orient to some of the measures, customer. Other boxes, you'll see, will orient to financial. Others will orient to internal process. But in the end, we saturate that whole picture with measures across the spectrum of those four categories.
Yes, sir.
Question. I've heard the models presented here this afternoon, and I thought that the Florida model was more externally focused, actually getting feedback from customers what they think about the service. I think the Virginia model is probably more financially driven model. The true model comes across as very internally focused.
It is.
Right.
It is.
So I'm curious as to why is it internal when the customers that are external are more important than internal?
Well, two things. One, we don't see our members as external, so that's one piece. The second piece, we measure against what we can directly impact or influence. So there are some things that are external to the organization that if we have another H1N1, we can't measure against that, but we can measure against how responsive we are to that. The second piece of the answer to your question is that going forward, we actually do want to begin measuring on our membership survey how we're driving our performance against this in the customer perspective specifically. Any other questions? Thank you.
Great, thank you.
So as promised, we have an opportunity for a broad Q&A with the panel up here, and we'd be glad to address any questions. I'm going to ask them to come up and stand with me. We have one microphone here, and we can dance back and forth here to the microphone. While they're coming up, I wanted to mention to you, if you're interested in the ROI approach, there is a webinar coming up on Wednesday, November 14th on calculating your ROI. That's November 14th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, an ASTO-sponsored webinar. If you want more details, email infocenter@asto.org. And we'll get you the details for signing on to that webinar. That's Wednesday, November 14th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, infocenter@asto.org, and we'll get that information to you. So again, if you'll join me in thanking the panel before we take questions. So questions? Yes. So the question for those on the recording is something about defining the customer and how we import that into our customer satisfaction.
I think that is something we even struggle with because there's your internal customer. So some of our program offices in Tallahassee, the customer is the county health department staff, very much like ASTO was saying. They're members they kind of consider internal. And then there's the external. And so environmental health has a different customer than our STD program, than our WIC program. Than our school health program, et cetera. So I think because we do have what we consider diverse customer groups, we have to kind of be very global with how we define a customer. And so I think the definition first is key, and maybe not trying to capture all of your customers all in one bucket. It's kind of for these public health programs, the customer is going to be an external customer that is coming in and receiving something from us. Another type of customer group might be, it's kind of almost segmenting your customers and not trying to come up with maybe one definition that covers everybody because it begins to confuse people. I don't define my customer that way. Does that help?
Great. Yes, Ryan.
In public health, we often look for the nth level of precision when it comes to data. And,
The question is about, in public health, we typically try to drive towards the most precise measurement. And in this case of ROI and customer satisfaction and balanced scorecard, what's good enough in terms of precision?
One standard deviation. Now, I'm a big believer though in getting the general ballpark and then moving on, especially for some of the PI projects that we're doing. Yes, it's $500,000 in savings, and next year we may incur more IT costs, whatever. Get the big picture. I think public health, at least, and I'll just speak for Virginia, we struggle so much just with the basics of an efficient administration that it is a fool's effort to waste your time arguing down to the devils in the details about what the data should be. Realize what try to manage the big picture and then fight your battles on that. I think public health spends far, far too much time getting into the real nitty-gritty when they don't need to. That thing where we got 40 steps and 20 people, and we could have sat in a room and argued about that all day. But at some point you just say, forget it. Let's boil it down to this and move on.
For me, it's if you have enough information to make a good decision. It's not data for data's sake, just if you can make a good decision.
I think from Florida's perspective, if I can just add, that you have to start somewhere. We've spent, with our county performance snapshot, this has been a continuous performance improvement project. We did hold it static for a couple of years, but it's, so what did that data tell us? Can we use it, and how are we going to revise it? Almost like rapid improvement. Ours was a little bit over time, so we could get some information. But if you can use the data to make an informed decision, it is the data that you have versus, so if you only have 5 customer comments, do you throw those away and go, I only had 5 because I saw 50? Or do I, wait until I get 45, and is that good enough? So I think you take the 5, you recognize that it's probably not as many as you need to have, but you take what you have and you use that to inform where you're going and keep moving.
And the sort of the devil under the surface is that tax dollar is somehow much more important to measure specifically than the dollar I spent for India Pale Ale. You know what I'm saying? Other questions? Yes?
I'm curious about the training piece. Because I think it's fair to say that depending where you are about managing things, this is a shift in terms of approaching programs and projects.
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to what training component, if any, A, B, what incentive, if any, celebrating success, have you initiated or put in place as part of the program?
The comment is these approaches, these tools, represent clearly a shift in how we're going to manage our work and how do we train staff up to be prepared for this work.
We still go with the keep it simple, stupid model, and we get everybody into a room. Whenever we do a PI project, get everybody into a room. We'll go over 3 or 4 different very easy methodologies. Here's a plan, do, study, act, cycle. Here are a couple tools that we use. And then leave it at that, because most of it's not rocket science. You don't need Six Sigma. You don't need Baldrige. You don't need all this nonsense. You just sit in a room and then map out the process. And when you get everybody together and they start going through that process themselves, it's intuitive. So that's how we've approached it, and it's been quite effective. And then in terms of incentive, a lot of these things, because we report directly to the commissioner, and that's a nice setup for us, we've had enough influence to be able to say, hey, Commissioner, can you recognize Jim and Sally and Tina at the next meeting who did XYZ? And that goes a long way. But the other part of it is just they don't have to deal with that sucky process that they hate it anymore. And they fixed it. And that's the best incentive we can do.
I'm sure. Actually, if Allison, you could stand. Allison and Carl, that's how we train staff. So we have monthly all-staff meetings, and quarterly we report out to the board. Each quarter someone needs to be reminded of how do you enter the data, what's the importance of this. So we have in-house training.
As it relates to customer satisfaction, we have a variety of online customer satisfaction. It's built into new employee orientation by some of our county health departments. We also have a Bright Ideas database, so if there have been evidence-based implemented practices that they have data for that have improved performance, they can submit those, and we try to market those and share those. A lot of it is left to the leadership to do right now to do that. I think as we move forward to having a much more robust policy for the department and making sure everybody's using that equally, we will step up for our training and how we recognize staff.
Did you have a follow-on question?
Yeah, I wanted to know if this is the ROA design schematic.
And when you do the ROI training, how does that go? I think that was it.
Yeah, that's a day at best. I mean, beforehand, we send it out to everybody, and we say, you know, we're going to work on this process. So, and we ask them in advance. We'd like to know specifically, you know, how much time this process takes you, who's involved. You know, get it down to the details. And we give them that homework in advance, so they all do it on their own. But when we get together, we try to keep it short and sweet because we're all, you know, sick of meetings and everything else.
Isn't there things about rapid analysis?
Yeah, exactly. Sit in a room with a whiteboard and get it done.
For those of you in the recording, that was about flow charting. Other questions? Other questions? Well, thank you again for attending. Thank our panel, please.